Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, if you are a fan of the PBS Wisconsin show Around the Farm Table, you probably recognize that music. I really like that music. It really gets you going, doesn't it? And a couple of guests for you today. The show's host, one of our guests, Inga Wischer. Inga, welcome.
Hi, Larry. It's so nice to talk to you again.
Good talking with you. And we'll also be talking with producer and director Colin Crowley. Colin, good to see you.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having us on.
Great to have you back. And they're going to be talking about a new special edition of this very popular show. And I've seen some clips from it. It's fantastic. And if you're a fan, or even if you're not, I hope you'll join in the conversation. What would you like to know about what goes on behind the scenes, maybe? Join in. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Inga, let's start with you. This brand new special, it's airing tonight. And maybe talk about how it's different from your regular series.
So regularly, we used to do 8 episodes every season. This year is a little bit different because of the challenges of COVID. I started making cheese on my farm, so we're a little bit more focused on being on the farm. So what we did instead of making 8 episodes is we made 4 really, really beautiful episodes and took our time and took the time to really create a beautiful story and get our production team does the most amazing job of getting the most beautiful shots throughout the year. So this episode has been in the works for months and months and months, and I'm so excited about the stories behind these farmers in a little place called Prairie Farm.
Yeah, it's a beautiful production, that's for sure. And you're also going to have a special version of your show from last fall, if I'm not mistaken. The one you did about making cheese. What's new in this version?
Yeah. Well, it's everyone's favorite time of the year. It's the pledge drive. And I wait, for months for the pledge drive to happen. So I'll be in the studio in Madison tonight doing the pledge for this episode. And so we also get to see a little sneak peek of what I'm doing on the farm with my cheese. So if you missed our first episode that aired in, I believe, September or October, you can see some of the footage from that, from how we graze the cows, to how we milk the cheese. And I love introducing everyone to my cows. So it's worth tuning into it so you can see those beauties.
Well, I tell you what, I have tasted your cheese, and it is delicious. And I'm told there are ways for viewers to taste some of your cheese. How do they do that?
Well, one of our gifts tonight will be 3 Wisconsin Farmstead cheeses featuring St. Isidore's, which is the name of my cheese. You can also find it in Madison at Metcalf Market and Fromage Nation, which is one of my favorite cheese stores.
Yeah.
And they actually will ship nationwide. So if you can't get there in person, you can give Ken a call.
Well, it's really, really good. Well,
thank you.
On this episode of Around the Farm Table, you travel to the community of Prairie Farm. And somebody might say, well, where the heck's that? Where is that?
So Prairie Farm is kind of, I always say, oh, it's on the way to my brother's house because he lives in Cumberland. So it's kind of between Menominee and Barron County, I guess. So Northern Wisconsin, about an hour and a half from my farm here in Osseo. And it's this beautiful little community. And I've been being introduced to these really innovative farmers there. I met Ken and Jay from Hay River Pumpkin Seed Oil, gosh, almost 10 years ago. And Ken and I actually served together on the Wisconsin Organic Advisory Council for a few years. So I got to know them through that as well. And they produce pumpkin seed oil on their farm. And then just a few minutes up the road is Aaron Link, who has the coolest goats. They're a heritage breed goat. They're just so funky. And then, of course, Maggie at Greenlight Farm, who is amazing at growing cut flowers.
Well, it really is beautiful. Somebody might wonder, what are the growing conditions like in that area of the state?
Well, Colin, maybe you can help me out with this too. Now that you're kind of an honorary farmer after filming with Around the Farm for so long, yeah. But it's a little hilly. When we were there, it was so dry. They were experiencing a really, really intense drought. Everything was so dry. And it's funny when you drive around the state of Wisconsin in the summertime, my dad and I, we drive together everywhere and we're both, you know, farming for our whole lives. And we have to look at every corn stalk on the way to make sure, you know, is it droopy? Is it going straight up? What's the drought here looking like?
Never gets out of your system. I do the same thing. And I haven't been on a farm in a long time, but that's where I grew up. Colin, you anything to add?
Well, one of the interesting things about filming this episode is learning how different farmers adapt to growing these crops in the northern Wisconsin climate. So, for example, I mean, when you think of fresh cut flowers, a place like the northern Middle West isn't the first area that would come to mind. But Maggie has really, figured out some innovative solutions on how to do it. And a lot of that starts with building hoop houses so that she can actually start her season early and then extend it later. So she's adding on, she's tacking on a month or two in either side of the summer. And then Ken and Jay, who grow pumpkins, have figured out that it works best to seed start their pumpkin plants in a local greenhouse before they plant them.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So what are the logistics of doing a shoot like this? I'm thinking back to my own television. I've shot a few ads where I was kind of a featured person in the ads, and for a minute ad, there were like three setups or four setups, and relighting and all that. But what are the logistics of doing a shoot like this?
Well, the approach we've taken this season, since we are doing less episodes, it means we have more time to plan. So what I did last winter was I called each of those farmers, and the main question I asked them is, what are the three most beautiful days on your farm? What are the three most important days? When are they? And what are we going to see? And they each sent me back a calendar with about five or six different dates. And then we kind of match that to our production capacity. So, for example, with Maggie, we were able to get there in late April to see her harvesting tulips. Yeah. But then to come back again in late summer to see the full flowers in bloom. And with Ken and Jay, who are growing the pumpkins for the pumpkin seed oil, we've done something really special with this show in that we've followed these pumpkins literally from babies to adults. So we have them in the greenhouse going into the ground. We have them midsummer being irrigated. And we have them, I think you've seen that clip, Larry, of them actually harvesting the pumpkins and separating out the seeds.
Yeah, it is. It's an amazing, amazing operation. And let's talk a little bit more about that Hay River pumpkin seed oil. And let's play it. We have an audio clip from that. Tyler, you want to give that a shot?
So tell me a little bit about the oil. I want to know, like, what it tastes like. What are those benefits of this oil?
Actually,
you know, it. Have you ever had roasted pumpkin seeds?
Yeah.
It has a rich, nutty flavor. It's delicious. I mean, that's the main reason we're doing this. It's a really tasty, delicious oil.
The color is beautiful and kind of unexpected.
It is. I mean, you're not normally seeing this in oils. And actually, the color is the nutrition. So pumpkin seed oil is rich in some of these compounds that are antioxidants in our body. And it's a very healthy fat with a wide range of benefits, you know, from, you know, healthy cholesterol to supporting heart health. But the thing we like to really focus on is the taste. It tastes good.
Well, Inga, what's that oil used for? Explain that.
Well, I use it all the time. I really, really, this is one thing that I love about Wisconsin is that we have so many great ingredients at our fingertips. So I use it on salads. I've been using just a little tablespoon on roasted vegetables. And actually, lately, I've been putting a little bit on my skin. I just turned 40 this year, so I have to, like, think about, like, wrinkles now, unfortunately. And pumpkin seed oil is just, like, so healthy in all these different antioxidants and things. So I'll just put, like, a little bit on my skin at night and a little bit of milk in the morning. You know, that's how I keep my youthful glow. But you can use it on anything from vanilla ice cream and put a little bit of the oil on top, and it's really delicious. It's just so fun. But you're not only getting a really amazing taste with this, you're also getting, you know, you're a nice little pack of nutrition and, you know, all these lovely things. So,
and Colin, you did some research on pumpkin oil, didn't you?
Part of the fun of doing this show is, I mean, my research is talking to the farmers themselves. And, you know, these guys, Ken and Jay, are now experts on pumpkin seed oil. So what they explained to me, which is interesting, is that they are the first farm in America to produce pumpkin seed oil. So before Ken and Jay, it just wasn't a product here. But interestingly enough, it's been a delicacy in Europe, specifically coming out of the country of Austria, for hundreds of years, going back all the way to when the first explorers brought back pumpkins from North America. So it was something that they had known about and that it has been successful in the European market. And when they settled in Prairie Farm, they thought, well, what if we tried pumpkin seed oil here? Americans love pumpkins. Why not bring the oil to the public?
And I can tell you the harvest portion of it, I saw a little clip, at least part of the clip was involved in the harvesting of it. And the harvesting of those seeds, I don't know if I want to go into all of that because let's save a little for those who want to watch it. But what an operation that they've got there for that. It's an amazing piece of machinery for sure, Inga.
Yeah, they had to bring it in from Turkey. You know, here in Wisconsin, we have combines on, every mile down the road, you're passing a combine or a manure spreader or all these different things. But they had to import this piece of machinery because they're the first people doing pumpkin seed oil here. And it's just so neat to see how it can separate out the seeds. I love equipment. I'm terrible at fixing equipment, but I love it. And so for me, it's just like, ooh, that's really kind of cool. I wonder what I could do with that on my farm,
Oh, man. Inga Wisher and Colin Crowley, our guests today. Inga, of course, hosts Around the Farm Table on Wisconsin Public Television, and Colin is the producer and director of Around the Farm Table. You can join in questions or comments or maybe a comment about the show itself. I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau and Courtney Everett are producers for today's two shows. Tyler Ditter is our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with our guest Inga Wisher from Around the Farm Table, airing on Wisconsin Public Television. Colin Crowley, producer and director of Around the Farm Table. And we're talking about the show itself. And there's a special airing tonight at 7 p.m., isn't it, on PBS Wisconsin, Colin, if I'm not mistaken? Oh.
It's at 7 p.m.
on PBS Wisconsin. And those who are outside the viewing area can also see it on our Facebook page or on the PBS Wisconsin website.
So you're going to love this show. I'm pretty sure of that. And you mentioned, Inga, you mentioned flowers earlier. And the next farmer I wanted to talk about is Maggie Sheehan, who grows flowers for cutting. It really isn't very usual in Wisconsin, is it? It's kind of unusual to have this kind of business.
Yeah, well, luckily there's a lot more farmers doing it, and it's a need that we have. I think one thing that Maggie says is we think a lot about where our food is coming from. We think a lot about those food miles. We should also be thinking about where our flowers are coming from, because a lot of those flowers are coming from other countries. They're being shipped in. They're being, a lot of chemicals used on them and things like that. So by finding flowers locally, we're not only supporting the local economy, but we're also getting really beautiful, diversified flowers. And yeah. Larry, I know that you are a gardener, and this woman, I mean, we all have planted bulbs in the fall and kind of like, all right, let's get our 10 bulbs in. She puts in 20,000 tulip bulbs every year. My back hurts for her.
Then you have to harvest them.
I know. And she harvested like 3 or 4 times a day to get them at the right stage she was. I was just like, gosh, dairy farming is a walk in the park.
You know, we've got a clip. Let's play that clip, Tyler. Have we got it?
So this year, in the past couple of years, I've grown about 20,000 tulips. They're all harvested by hand and sold here on the farm throughout western Wisconsin and in the Twin Cities. Tulip season is only a couple of weeks long. It's very energy intensive. We harvest tulips 1, 2, sometimes 3 times a day, 7 days a week until they're all harvested.
For me, it is so interesting to see this different style of farming, so different than dairy farming, and realize the amount of work and knowledge that really goes into this.
Oh, man, it's cool. And by the way, she's got some pretty cool tattoos, too, I noticed. She's an artistic person, for sure. And she extends, Colin, you were saying she extends the growing season?
Well, yeah, by using these hoop houses, she's able to start earlier and, you know, she heats these up. So she creates that environment inside the hoop houses so that it can protect her from, you know, if it's an unseasonably cold spring or a cold fall, she has more time on each end of the season.
What was it like to film her, by the way, Colin?
Well, it was funny for us because when we think of gardening, a lot of people are attracted to gardening or horticulture because it's a slow, relaxing activity. But I think with Maggie, we could call it extreme gardening, maybe. You know, we were two camera operators there trying to follow her when she harvested. And the most common thing you heard that day was, Maggie, can you please slow down? Because we couldn't even get the focus on a flower before Maggie had plucked it out and she was, you know, 20 feet down the row. So we had to really ask her to do things at a slower pace. We probably cut her productivity down that day by about 50%. But viewers will see when they watch the show, you know, this is not a big mechanized operation. This is Maggie working everything by hand with 3-4 employees helping her out. It's a really impressive farm.
And I really liked, and maybe you could comment on this, Inga, when she harvests those tulips, she pulls them out bulb and all.
Yeah, and she said it's easier to do it that way than trying to keep the bulbs and overwinter them and everything else. And I thought that was really interesting. And just to see, I mean, really to see her work is quite something. It really made me feel lazy.
Well, and I think, you know, putting my gardener cap on for a minute, leaving that bulb on, I imagine it keeps the flower fresher, alive longer, so that when she goes to ship them, of course they get those bulbs get cut off.
Yeah.
There was something interesting Maggie explained to us, and there's probably some horticulture experts out there who can confirm this, but from what she explained is the point that she harvests the tulips, because she's harvesting them early with the idea that they have a bit more time before they get to market, harvesting them early actually prevents the bulb from being able to produce a flower the next year. So whereas when we grow tulips at home, we let the tulip take its full course, its full life cycle, and then overwinter it. Maggie explained that it doesn't work that way when you're doing them for fresh cut flowers.
Yeah, I still think it would add to the longevity of the flower itself in terms of getting it from the, because you're not going to pluck them out and send them the same day, typically, I wouldn't think. Typically.
I think she does.
Oh, she does.
Well, I think maybe she can call in and answer this question. You should have her on a garden talk on Friday. We can call in and ask
seriously,
questions.
Yeah.
But I, you know, so she harvests like all week and then she'll go to the markets on Saturday. And then she has specific stores that she sells her tulips to in the springtime.
And I think she even sells some flowers over in Minnesota as well.
Yeah, a lot in Minnesota.
Well, I tell you what, she's a very interesting person and a very interesting operation. The other one, and by the way, all these farms were around next to each other, were they, or you know, nearby, were they not?
They were, Yeah, like 20 minutes away from each other.
Minutes away. And they're all friends. They're all people who know each other, who help each other out on their farms.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to know. And that last farm, I think it was Prairie Farm, and that's where we find the goats.
Yeah, so Erin Link has this really interesting farm. She does these heritage breed goats. She has some ducks and some chickens that they all graze during the season. And she's very cool and punk rock. Like, you just kind of want to be cooler when you're around her. And her goats are, like, cool and punk rock, too. So it's just, like, she really picked the correct breed for her personality. It's really beautiful.
Well, I agree with you on that. She's got goats, but then I see she's got ducks and she's got chickens. Right?
So by having these different species on your farm, they're all going to graze a little bit differently. So the goats will go and they'll do their little browsing, and then the chickens and the ducks will follow them in that pasture rotation to eat some of the little larvae out of the manure, kind of clean up anything the goats didn't eat. So it's this kind of like a nice little system of grazing where you're really utilizing all of the land, because my cows are going to graze differently than, say, sheep do. So if you're grazing different species together, you're really getting the most out of the land, out of the grasses.
You know what? We've got Maggie on the line here.
Thank goodness.
Maggie, awesome. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Inga. Hi, Colin.
Hey, Maggie.
Wow. Well, we were, we were talking about your operation there. Maybe you can help us out on, I was talking about the flowers and the bulbs, the tulip bulbs. I was thinking that the tulip bulbs themselves help keep the flowers until they're ready to be sold. And Colin did, I think, a nice job of explaining. But talk a bit about your operation.
Sure. Well, I don't want to take time away from you talking about the other operations. I was just going to say that Colin did a great job of explaining the reasons why that we don't perennialize the tulips, given that we're taking the energy away from the flower when it's at its prime versus letting it die back and the energy go back into the bulb. He did a great job explaining that. And to the question, you are also correct, Larry. We keep the bulbs on also because that way we can harvest them with the bulb attached to the flower. The flower has its plant source attached to it, so we can store them in our walk-in cooler for, usually we sell them within a week or two, but we could actually store them that way for 3 or even up to 4 weeks and kind of sell them at the pace that we need to versus having the pressure of selling them right away, which is what we do with all of our other crops. So just wanted to call in and tell you that you and Colin were both correct. I should sign back off now so I can let you get back to talking about the other farm.
Maggie, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling, Maggie. Appreciate that call. And I'm relieved to know that I guess I was right. And Colin, certainly you knew what you were talking about there, too. So we were both correct in what we were talking about as it related to tulips. Well, oh, man, let's take another call. And by the way, you could join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us to ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to Dennis in Eau Claire. Dennis, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to, thank Inga and Colin for the work that they're doing around the farm table and bringing awareness to small farms in Wisconsin. There is actually on the Wisconsin Public Radio website a story saying that in the last 4 decades, we have lost 40,000 farms. So we're 40,000 farms fewer than we were 4 decades ago. And the attrition rate is still very high, about a farm a day, maybe a little bit less in the last 2 years. But the economic model that the industrial farming complex presents is get bigger or get out. And I so appreciate the work that Inga does and Colin does of showing small farms that have adapted, you know, very creative, smaller, out-of-the-box economic models for staying alive and being viable businesses.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Dennis, for calling. And, you know, what crosses my mind is the financial models that these farms use. And I don't know if either of you are prepared to talk about, well, Inga, maybe you are because you have your own operation. The financial model for a smaller farm, I always want to say smaller farmer, but it's not the farmer isn't small. It's the it's the farm.
Well, it's Dennis. Thank you for calling in. That is so so nice to hear that you appreciate what we're doing, and we are losing farms at an incredible rate all over. One thing that I decided to do on my farm is because I knew I couldn't continue to be at the scale that I was when I was milking between 40, 50 cows and shipping milk. It just wasn't working financially. So I had to really kind of say, what do I do now? And so I'm taking a risk. I'm going really, really small. I won't grow past 10 cows on my farm so that I can make sense with grazing the cows, you know, getting all of that feed off of my farm. And I think by going small, a lot of these folks can think outside the box and do it differently. They're not having to go out and purchase a combine for, you know, $250,000 or whatever they cost and harvesting corn and things like that and competing with a lot of the other farms. They're thinking, hey, let's do something different on our farm, whether it's a meat share CSA like Erin's doing with her chickens, or I know that Ken and Jay, before they decided on pumpkins, they were experimenting with growing peonies as cut flowers, doing herbs in the woodlands, different things before they settled on one thing. And the thing about the farmers that we feature and that I really gravitate towards is they're okay with trying different things and saying, this worked, this didn't work, let's go ahead. And I think that's a model we're going to see more and more moving ahead in agriculture, is people being willing to change and being innovative with it.
Yeah. And I think Maggie, in one of the clips that I saw, she talks about that. She experiments with different flowers. She looks at, tries to figure out what's demand for what types of flowers, of course. But then she also, she'll experiment and see what happens. If she tries a different flower, and then she's
right.
But she also got to say she does some just because she likes the colors.
Yeah. But, you know, it's always about what, as farmers, we have to be thinking about what is it costing us to produce that flower? Am I growing that flower because I like it, because it's easy to grow, because it's, bringing in money? And like for me, I'm thinking about it's not as the amount of milk that I can produce. It's how much does it cost me to produce that amount of milk? So I'm going off on a tangent now.
No, that's all right. That's okay.
I'm thinking about my business plan.
No, that's okay. And the result at least for Maggie is really a beautiful. I mean, you look at the tulips, for example, the tulips you show, some of them I'm looking at them and saying, man, I haven't seen those. I want some of those for myself. And she, this is another aspect of it, I think, too, Inga. She has a website. She has a blog.
Yeah, she does.
She has an Instagram feed that's real popular.
Oh, an Instagram. Yeah, and she, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Follow her on social media. Her photos are just beautiful and exactly what we all need to get us to spring and the growing season. They're just beautiful.
Yeah, it's...
Sorry, Colin.
That's fine. You can find her by just looking up Greenlight Farm is where you can find her. And if you want to see some pictures of those cool goats, look up EB Ranch. EB is in the initials. So EB Ranch. And then for lots of photos of the pumpkins and the pumpkin seed oil, look up Hay River Pumpkin Seed Oil. all three of these farmers have wonderful social media feeds that are full of great photos and videos, which I think, Inga, is another interesting point about how these small farmers are making it and marketing their product, is that social media is becoming more and more important as a tool to connect with the public.
Yeah, I would certainly agree to that. And maybe we should talk more about Erin with her goats and poultry operation. And she uses a rotational system, a rotation system on her land. And I thought you did a nice job of kind of showing it, but maybe you could explain, I don't know, Colin, do you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, well, again, this is, the farmers are the experts, and I'm just kind of conveying what I've learned from them. But Erin explained something interesting, that there is a certain parasite in the ground that is dangerous to goats. And those parasites live on snails. And what eats snails? Ducks. So if you graze the ducks ahead of the goats, the ducks are going to go and clean up all these snails, and they're going to wipe out that parasite in a patch of grass. And then the goats follow next, now, you know, without the danger of these parasites. And then they drop their manure and everything and clean up the grass. And then the chickens kind of come and, you know, peck and scratch behind and kind of clean up that manure that they've left behind. So apparently this is a well-known rotational grazing for that combination of animals, and Erin has adopted it and experiments with it and is constantly adding new animals. I know she just added guinea fowl to her poultry, which is a poultry that's comes from Africa, actually, but she's figured out some recipes on how to use it and work them in with her system.
And they pick, they're great to have on a farm. We had some on the farm, friends of mine on their farm had a lot of guinea fowl who would snap up every insect.
I've heard they're good for getting rid of ticks, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, they're great for that, and they're noisy sometimes. They've got quite
A couple years ago, we met a farmer up in, I want to say it was Spooner, and she had guinea fowl, and she said they're great. She had pigs on her farm, and she said the guinea fowl actually alert us when there are bears in the area, because they make so much noise. So anytime there's a bear coming near, we'll hear the guinea fowl go nuts, and we know to go out and make sure the pigs are secured.
Well, Inga, of course you're a farmer. Colin, you've said many times, well, you're not a farmer, but you've certainly done a lot of work with farmers. But is that a plus or a minus to have and other crew as members as well, to have some non-farmers on the crew?
Colin, Inga, what's your take on that? Oh. What's it like working with a bunch of lay people?
I love it because you can see farms through a different lens. It's, you know, when we're there with our crew, they see things so much differently than like my dad and I will see it, because my dad and I grew up around farming for forever. Last time we were filming something in my pasture, our camera guy, James, grabbed a hold of the fence and totally got electrocuted. And I was just like, oh my gosh, why would you grab a hold of the fence, right? It was really fun. But just the different things that they can see from a perspective of someone who didn't grow up farming is really interesting. And I think it helps us tell the stories, and they can say, well, maybe talk in a different way, because not everyone knows what a dry cow is, or you know, maybe we don't, you know, we want to explain it so that everyone can understand it. And I think it's really great. Have you been learning some farming skills along the way, Colin?
I think so. I mean, I've got to, as you saw the last time we filmed, I had to haul some bales of hay around. That's good for me. I mean, that would make my father proud, who grew up on a farm baling hay. I guess, Larry, the way we look at it is, you know, when you are a videographer or a photographer, there's nothing better to film than someone who's really good at what they do. There's nothing more interesting. Whether that's an athlete, a musician, an artist, or in this case, farmers are all experts at these physical activities that they do just by virtue of repetition, through years of mastery. So there are things that I think are very mundane for farmers. For example, last year we filmed Inga jumping on a skid steer and placing a round bale in the middle of a pasture. And for Inga, that's just an everyday chore. And for us as a camera crew, that was an adventure, figuring out this is so cool. How can we make this look as dramatic and exciting as possible? And that goes the same for if you're milking goats, or if you're harvesting pumpkins, or if you're, cleaning and cutting flowers. There is this physical skill that goes hand in hand with agriculture that I think every farmer has and perhaps takes for granted. But when we come in as an outside film crew, we don't take any of that for granted. We see this all as extremely interesting, and we like to use our cameras to put a spotlight on the work that farmers do.
Well, and the results are very apparent in some wonderful productions, not only the film, but then, of course, Inga, who is a wonderful host and a great presence in the show itself. It's always, you always sound like you're so interested, and you are.
It's exciting. It's exciting to learn about all these different things.
Well, I tell you what, people are going to have a chance to see it tonight, airing tonight, right?
Tonight at 7 p.m. on Wisconsin Public Television, and it's a Pledge Drive episode, so I will be in the studio talking about all the great things that Wisconsin Public Television does for our community. Tune in, you're going to see our Prairie Farm episode, and then you're going to see bits of our cheese-making episode as well.
Yeah, and you're going to have a chance to buy or get your hands on some of Inga's cheese, too.
Absolutely. Some of Archie's, some of Marique's Gouda, and some of Upland's Pleasant Ridge Reserve. So it's a nice, it's a very delicious reward if you'd like to support public television this evening.
Well, I usually support public television when there's a cool thing like that. I will be watching, and I'll probably be calling in with another donation so I can get my hands on some of your cheese.
Thank you so much, Larry.
All right. Colin, Inga, thank you so much. It's been always a pleasure, and you've got a wonderful show, and it was fun talking with you about it. Thanks again. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry, for having us.
Thank you, Larry.
Oh, man. Inga Wischer hosts Around the Farm Table on Wisconsin Public Television. Inga owns and operates a small organic dairy farm near Osseo, Wisconsin. Our other guest, Colin Crowley, has been with us a few times now. He's the producer and director of Around the Farm Table. He's a multimedia producer for the Cultural Affairs Unit at PBS Wisconsin. Always kind of fun and uplifting to talk with those two characters. Well, we got another interesting person that we're going to be talking about next, who has passed on now. Carson Gully is a master of the culinary arts, and we'll learn more about him and his work as a chef on the University of Wisconsin campus. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.